Bueno, ellas presento al profesor Guedes, a las personas que nos van haciendo con él al workshop. Y creo que vale la pena también que las personas que nos están haciendo al workshop, como el profesor Guedes, puguin pasar un momento a ver lo que se hacen. Y también las personas que están haciendo al workshop, como el profesor Guedes, puguin pasar un momento a ver qué están haciendo al otro workshop. Crec que és una confrontació força interessant. Ara farà una presentació de la seva obra, i precisament, com a l'altra hora que ens has explicat, que ell té 25 estils diferents. Ha fet una classificació de la seva obra, i avui presentarà, sobretot, aquell que ell diu l'estil Guedes, que després podem discutir, i entre tots ens preguntem a aprofitar de la seva presència a València. I novament agraeixo moltíssim que hem pogut organitzar aquest workshop i aquesta conferència per a tots.
Thank you.
I am the Peruvian Mozambicano, where I incorporate 25 architectures that are made. You see, if you work in a place where there are very few architects or very bad architects, then you have a lot of work and you start working at all kinds of levels. You work for banks, you work for missionaries, you work for the representative, the cardinal represents the Pope and the Vatican. You work for Swiss Calvinists, whom the Catholics want to avoid and eliminate in a problematic state which is controlled by a capital in Europe, the capital of the empire. Salazar never went to the colonies. He was terrified of the animals and nothing, terrified of blacks, terrified of Indians. He stayed in Lisbon and he used to go and pass his holidays in a little fortress near Seville. Then he came at it thinking what was going to happen to Portugal when he died. What would happen to the Escudo when he died? And we know, my father was in the medical service, the colonial medical service. First we lived in the Gulf of Guinea at San Tomé and Príncipe. They discovered petrol in the sea of San Tomé and Príncipe. It was going to be an enormous battle between French petrol firms and BP over the oil field, because as you know, Nigerian oil is not in Nigeria but in another place, which is a country which didn't come to be a country. The Afra is where BP exports oil these days. Now San Tomé will have oil. Fortunately, Mozambique, or unfortunately, hasn't got oil. Some people think that they're going to run out of oil quite soon, and that will be a terrible trouble for America, because America is all about oil and tar for the road. And golden oil is very good for tar. And the the Americans like it very much. When I was about 6 years old, my father was sent to Mozambique to a little place where there was a hospital, a village. And I went to school there and finished primary school, and then went to boarding school to the Lyceum, but things didn't go well. So as punishment, I was sent to boarding school with the Marist Brothers in Johannesburg and turned into an Englishman. All of a sudden, and studied and married as a student, a fellow student in another discipline. And this is Lorenzo Marcus, hello, multimedia projector. That is Lorenzo Marquez, or was Lorenzo Marquez, round about 1960-65. It grew immensely, and it will come. It grew immensely until the Portuguese had a little revolution in Portugal, and the war had come to an end, except in Guinea, and the army wanted to go home, so they promised that there would be 10 years period where adjustments would be were made for independence, but the army was in a great hurry, and they sorted things out within 12 months in a very haphazard way. And tough war lots of people to Portugal, and they were settled in Portugal. I also came to see what was going on. It was absolutely terrible. And instead I became professor of architecture at the university where I studied. And for 15 years I traveled, gave lectures, and became an academic and enjoyed myself immensely. I thought I could do the same by coming to Portugal to teach, but Portugal was quite another thing. It was very tight, very disorganized, and the schools were very bad. So after having tried quite hard in Portugal, I now paint and do sculpture in the bush and travel. Most of the time I travel to my two daughters who are in South Africa, because since Dori died, I'm alone in Portugal. I tried, oh, she's back. There's the town plan. That's the town plan of Lorenzo Marquez. Lorenzo Marquez, with this plan, has become, from one moment to the other, a world capital. And all the houses that families made and saved money for most of the lives that I built have now become the houses of the ambassadors of various countries, the world capital with the president. The first president died very romantically in the crash of the aircraft, and he went and crashed into South Africa on the way for plotting the revolution in Zambia, which didn't come off. You know, presidents have these fixations about revolution everywhere. The red spots, they're not very visible, but the box in the town is where our main project, whether they built or not built, because I think the projects that don't get built are really much more creative and interesting than projects that do get built. I think really what architects do is to make drawings and models. That's what's really important about architects. Then the buildings that they make in most cases are buildings that are executed by contractors. And that is very problematic to have other people execute your building. When you work for missionaries, then you build with missionaries, you actually build what you've invented, what you've designed. But when you work with the builder's always in a great hurry to try and turn the whip into a money machine and finish it as quickly as possible and as badly as possible. Unless he's a small builder with two or three craftsmen. The first story, the opening story in the Vitruvius Mosaicus, is Stilo Gedish. Now, how Stilo Gedish comes about is not my name. After I'd done some buildings in Lorenzo Marquez, people would come and see me and ask me to design something. But they would say, we know that you make very good plans, but please don't do Stilo Gedish, because Stilo Gedish was pretty strange building with teeth, with claws. Some of the parts looked as if they were falling off. And they said, now, make buildings like the other buildings, square buildings. So that is how Stilo Gedish comes across. Now, I had been painting as a student. In my second year, I got accepted and exhibited with the gallery, Luchin Gallery in Johannesburg, in the academy. I got accepted to the academy. I think by the intervention of Eva Martinson, I suspect. There's all sorts of paintings that I am doing. I lived with Doris Terence on the mine. The father was a miner. And they were locations nearby. It gives mind and this Pedro, the first son, and Dari and me and Veronica coming up. This must be about 30 years. Dari was already qualified and was a nursery school teacher, and we had lived in a little thatched roof house by ourselves. Then we moved in with our parents, and I finished the course. But in those days, you could start life and not do your thesis for the degree. So I wanted to do a degree in mural painting, and the one teacher that I thought was working was a wonderful teacher. He'd actually been with the Architectural Review before the war, and then he'd gone to the war in Burma, and he'd been captured by the Japanese, and he was very sick. He was a great lecturer, but one day he put a bullet through his brain when I was in fifth year. And that was a bit of a disaster for me. So I arrived in the rooms of Marx, and within a fortnight I was designing a polygonal house. I'd actually bought a book on Frank Lloyd Wright called In the Nature of Material. And it was fantastic, Hitchcock's book. And it had all the plans, and this is particularly dependent on the plans of the Hama House in California. And one became obsessed with our right, had done all this before the other modernists, and had explored so many things. That is a perspective of the house, and the house has built and altered. The house is demolished 3 years before the revolution, to be replaced by a 17-story slab of apartments, speculative apartments for the owner of the house and the bank. This is a job for an Indian client. An Indian who comes from South Africa and is attended to by an engineer who then asks me to design a building for him. It's got shops, it's got rooms, it's been an hotel, a boarding house, all sorts of things. It's still there in Lorenzo Mons. I also start working for the municipality. One is arranging the fortress with an architect who's come from Portugal. They've done, dressed up the fortress with another architect and then some other architects come from Portugal and decided that the renewal of the fortress was very badly done, so we renewed it once again with Archidamus Schieter. I also did the main square of the city and became very interested in squares. There is the fortress and a military expedition is arriving in the Lorenz Amants to fight the lost king, Bumiana. One of the first buildings I did was an apartment block for a family who had a young engineer whom I've known when we had the lesson, and he'd gone to Portugal. It's actually the Dragon House, because I made a mural. This Dragon House being built, there was this young architect who used a lot of stone textures that he didn't need to paint. Even the pillars are faced with a calcarium that comes out of the cement mill. And the dragon, which gives the name, the dragon in Calçada, the first mural I do in Calçada, then I do lots of other murals. I've also got a proposal to do Guernica on the avenue in front of the Prado in Calçada. It'll last a lot longer than the real Guernica, which is falling apart in the museum. Then I had to do a thesis and write Harris Homer Comes In for Help, together with another work that he did in the United States, a more tropicalized life in Miami. There's the perspective of the hotel I did on the beach. I drove up to Johannesburg and presented it to the professor. And the professor sent for tea and fiddled with the book and then told me when I could come and graduate with my family. Part of the thesis and the manifesto, which I then transformed, this was one of the statements in the manifesto, which has been transformed into t-shirts and all sorts of things at various schools. Wright again was extremely helpful. There's a story in the Vitruvius, which is called Our Friend Lloyd Wright Used to Help Me in the Beginning. And that's the Wright building. The foreign shepherds in the port, the English, like what they thought were English houses, which Wright was doing. He also derived these houses from the publication that he got. Wright was a very dedicated student of English magazines on art and architecture actually right in his bedside at the 4 or 5 volumes of Lushing's work. He browsed those things very eagerly. Then I, quite early on, got asked to design an apartment house for a new area of Lorenzo Mont, and I could design a building which somehow connected to the sculptures of Picasso and my reinterpretation of the sculptures of Picasso. That is Prometheus. The names I put on buildings are my own names. This one called Prometheus, there's a section, and it has a central structural spine and throws out cantilevers. It stands on rockers. The plan, an axonometry on a corner side where 2 main avenues join. Under construction, photographed by Doring when I go away to have my degree recognized in Portugal. An early view of the building. It's all changed. It's now terrible, horrific, what they've done to it. Those are the bases underneath for the parking of the car. The teeth, which were very badly done, very straight. Soon you'll see other teeth done properly. Some of the Picasso sculptures that I was fascinated by. A house at Rubin Point for the director of the municipal services. It didn't get built, but you will see how it got built for the house that came after. An apartment house which also didn't get built, but got bits and pieces of it done in other buildings. And then the house for a judge. He asked me to do a house in a very long plot. And here are the first proposals. Mm-hmm. And the plan says the house was built. And a comparison from the sketch plan and the house as built. And the photograph of the house is a wonderful garden that the judge made for himself. At the time, there were, thank God, no light fittings at all on sale in Portugal, except in Mozambique, except chandeliers. So I could design witches' hats with the funny ladle. built the back of the house and the raised porch underneath. And Dory and I on the roof with one of the spectacular chimneys of the house. A proposal for a firm who wanted some offices and a showroom with three tanks hovering over the street and these bone-like and spikes and the blade lift shaft. It didn't get built. There's a section on the other side. And the showroom with the gantry for the spare parts. Then a row of four houses that I had made a copy of Michal's personage throwing a stone at the bird, and the facade tried to be somehow related to the big forms that Michal played with. These the row houses as built with a slightly knife-like re-soleil to the west, and a house, a double house, with ramps inside, connection, then a staircase, concrete roof with tiles on top. The plan forming two courtyards with one courtyard for each of the houses. Designs for the facade. The house is built. Afterwards, where the house turns into painting, I'm still doing these paintings now at 85. Then comes the bakery, and the bakery, I have a marvelous engineer. He's an Italian engineer, Vitale Moffa. He's actually been saved. He was on a prisoner of war ship which gets torpedoed by the German submarine working in the channel of Mozambique, and he is rescued by another Italian. He didn't know how to swim, and he came ashore and started practicing in Mozambique, and within I wanted to do a structure for a bakery that would be parabolic arches that you wouldn't need any reinforcement in them. So we worked a few parabolas. This is part of a picture with the section. Reads of its elevation, and it turns into a painting. And the plans of the bakery, the ovens were ordered from Germany. You know, at the end of the war, the Germans were great specialists in ovens. And unfortunately, German ovens couldn't make Portuguese bread, I suppose, like Spanish bread. I see the bread at the canteen. It's obviously made by a machine. It's not like real Spanish bread, which should be done with wood. I suppose Spain has run out of wood to bake bread. Portugal seems to be also the same. It's just white bread, nasty English or German bread, not Portuguese or Spanish bread. But the baker, let's go back to this. The bakers were terribly thrilled with my project because they thought I've designed this shape so that it would look like a Portuguese bread. And they have cut out in all the distribution shops in wood with this design. But the factory went bankrupt into the axonometric of the factory. It became used as a thing called Saipal, Pong de Cidade. It was used to make long ducts when air conditioning came. They produced ducts. Then it became occupied by an English firm that sold building material as a warehouse. Then the government after the revolution took it over and sold building material. Because then after the revolution only the government could sell building material. Nobody else had any desire to sell the building material, and there was very little building. It is now occupied by the waters of Mozambique. And there's talk that they are going to give it to me as a museum. I hope that they give it to me, and I'll start a school in the bread factory. It's nicknamed by the people of Lorenzo Marquez as the elephant. Those are the teeth, still very badly done, very sharp. That's the neutral zone running across. Right across the building, the void. That is the school that Byron, someone wanted the school. I was in Portugal getting my degree recognized, sat and sipping a state exam, and they asked me to do a school for Byron. I sent them the drawings, they built the school. That's the plan of the school. That's the only photograph I've got of the school. Maybe one day I'll go to Byron and photograph the school. Then some friends, the man who lived in the polygonal house, he saw, wanted to have a showroom and sell motor cars and have an office, and died and the little petrol pump here. So I designed this building this is the perspective for my design. They then introduced some other design and spoiled it quite a bit. That's it. Under construction with this Brice Soleil, our thoughts called Brice Soleil's were terribly boring. I mean, you can actually get movement by designing the elements of your Brice Soleil and giving some identity to a building. Then I met the tycoon who had all the cement companies, and he wanted a mark at the entrance, and I designed this mark and made various perspectives, and he, within a fortnight, he had someone building it, prefabricating the thing. We had a club, the Núcleo d'Arte. The Núcleo d'Arte, I made designs, and I'm still making designs for this, which never get built. There's an axonometric, the first design. Some perspective, a model which stayed behind in Mozambique, the plans of the Núcleo d'Arte with various alternatives for placement, the section. The model 9 times, the painting of that drawing, in the Milan Hotel, there was a curved wall which I designed. It's my first convulsive wall with metal sculptures that I did. And details of the mental life made out of scrap and sheep hide. The Palama bomb, also at the Palama Hotel, with a mural of dancing girls which relates back to a reinterpretation of Paul Klee's Dance of the Veil. And now we come to the Smiling Lion. It's a very small plot next door to the house. We lived in for an apartment building with parking downstairs. It's actually, this is a painting I did of a drawing by my son. He sees me designing the Smiling Lion and he makes the proposal. I'm actually building a little maquette of this in Johannesburg, which I hope to finish when I fly back to South Africa. Here are the 9 turns of the facade of the building, which ultimately gets built like that. An axonometric of the Smiling Lion. Various drawings of the Smiling Lion with quite elaborate murals which screen the servants' quarters up on the roof, and then other stone murals the smiling lion has built, this is the sort of thing that people didn't like. These balconies appear to be slipping off, and the buildings standing on little, funny little pillars that you hardly see. The two side facades with proper feet. That's when we just finishing doing the sidewalk and putting in the trees. The guard in the staircase has weapons, the balustrade, details of the mural in the parking. The facing on the pillars with the little bits of the residual stone and the smiling lion at the entrance. The parking terrace and the smiling lion himself and Kitty's doll's house for Katarina Gadish, who once had a doll's house. This is the intermediate stone. It suffered alteration. Details in the marvelous redwood shamputa. The details of the doll's house, the section, and the doll's sunbathing on the roof terrace, and the doll's house in the studio in Lisbon now. Look who's here. Has a backdrop for children, or Barcelona's children. There's a cutout. Another version, which got stolen, of a deluxe edition in white. Then one last house for the cooperative. And again, a model of a fragment of the bakery. And then the other story of buildings with walls twisting and turning in the manner that Alberti found so offensive. This is the plan and the roof plan for an hotel for San Martín of the Milanes, where the main building was to be cast on the sand dunes and then remove the sand. The client liked the idea very much to begin with, then they got cold feet. So I keep on improving the drawings and making paintings of it. There is the section to the hotel. The entrance sign and designed the building, which was received at the municipality with hoots of laughter. And then we designed another building, which was box and square, and that got built. There's the facade of the building, the plans of the building, with tiny apartments and shops downstairs. And then comes the Swazi Zimbabwe, a building that starts as a design, becomes painting, and gets built. These the plans of the Swazi Zimbabwe at Woodhull in Swaziland, the first floor, and the roof in concrete bonnets. Perspective of the building, a section and the perspective from the front, and the building as built by the owner, and during construction, and the habitable woman at Nelspruit, or my dentist at Nelspruit on a hillside, the plans of the habitable woman, the working drawing, some of the elevations, we are building it, but we only built it as far as the knees. The wife ran away. The dentist stopped building. He said he was going to build it, but it's been long ago. I don't know if he's alive or if he's built it. Maybe one day when I'm in South Africa, I'll go and see. Two more elevations, then a house in Byron for an engineer who's actually building the multi-story building which replaces the polygonal house. The ground floor, the first floor, the roof. The elevations and the section. And another sketch. Bleeding into the pool. The revolution killed it. Thank you very much. You see, you have to put up with some crime to give you a little bit of freedom. But it's great fun being an artist if you try and earn your living some other way.
All your projects, they are full of references.
information, so it was easier with where your contact with the European was. The other one is what you could suggest to our students that they have to do to learn to improve their career as artists in the cultural sense. I mean, you can see a kind of research during your career. And the question is what they have to do to improve their architectural research.
You must look for something that you really like, something that really disturbs you, like some painter, because painters are a lot freer than architects. Or like Frank Lloyd Wright was for me. I went to a school which was a Canadian school, which seemed to be very tight. The great initiator had died. The other people that had done beautiful buildings were rejecting those buildings. It was quite distressing. We now have a colleague who's doing research into what happened in South Africa. It was one of the first episodes of modernism in faraway places like the gold fields of South Africa. There a group led by a young man who had tremendous difficulty finishing his degree. He couldn't do mathematics. I also couldn't do mathematics when I went to university. I argued that we didn't need mathematics, we needed geometry, but they couldn't quite teach geometry. We were still connected with fine arts, and by the time I got to it, his man had died, but the man's wife was there at fine arts and was very, very wonderful and helpful. So, have you got a disturbance in your school? Is there a teacher who disturbs you, that builds strange buildings, or makes strange drawings, or paints funny pictures? No? Normally there's always somebody in the school. Whether it's in America, well, I knew a school where everybody was disturbing. That's the AA in London. They picked people who were disturbing to teach. And it was quite problematic, but absolutely wonderful. Well, it's very often that it's the teacher who's doing historical research, local historical research, that seems to cause an upheaval. If the person is a defining personality, But it's strange that there are so many schools of architecture. I mean, half of the world will be architects within a couple of years, I think.
Thank you very much for coming.